Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member, FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan, Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Pushkin.
Hey, Eddie here. Before we get started, I wanted you to know that you can listen to Car Show ad-free by becoming a Pushkin Plus subscriber. You'll also get access to Detours, bonus episodes of Car Show where we go for extended drives, play outtakes, and more. Find Pushkin Plus on the Car Show page in Apple Podcasts or at pushkin.fm.
Risky Business, 1983. Tom Cruise is Joel Goodson. His dad has a Porsche 928.
Ooh, nice car. Couple of boys in daddy's car.
Joel's just backed the silver coupe out of the garage and is rolling through town, doing high school senior things. He's the model kid. He's hoping to get into Princeton in the fall. He has no idea how sideways it's all about to go. Fast forward to the movie's second act. Joel is sitting with his girlfriend Lana, played by Rebecca De Mornay, on the hood of the Porsche, overlooking the lake.
Warm enough?
I'm okay.
They are soon to start their own little prostitution business. At the beginning of the scene, as Lana grabs her purse out of the 928, she knocks the shift lever into neutral. When she gets up from the hood of the car to leave Joel, he takes off after her.
Was it something I said?
The Porsche starts rolling down the dock toward the lake.
Oh, God. You locked the door! The keys are inside!
Oh, God. Please, stop!
Never has a car so perfectly embodied a Hollywood storyline. Forget The Graduate. Forget The Fast and the Furious. Risky Business director Paul Brickman couldn't have picked a better signifier for Joel's predicament. This is a car that's all about going in way too deep, getting way out over your skis. This is the story of the Porsche 928, an elite car with tons of promise, but one that, metaphorically speaking, fell right into the lake. I'm Eddie Alterman, and this is Car Show. In this episode, we'll examine how the 928, this raging tour de force of styling, engineering, and performance, failed to speak to the exact audience that should have loved it.
The Porsche 928 S. Some people ask why we put so much performance in a luxury car. And others ask why we put so much luxury in a performance car.
You'd think that in the 80s, a great and powerful continent crosser like the 928 would have been an easy sell to Porsche's polo cologne-wearing sports car clientele. It was not.
Porsche. Excellence is expected.
So how did this perfect Porsche become Porsche's pariah?
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The biggest issue with the 928 may have been the pre-existence of the Porsche 911. Porsche names its projects in running order. You can tell which came first because of the model numbers. The core model coupe started as the 901, but became the 911 after complaints from Peugeot. The Frenchie said that Porsche couldn't use the same number-zero-number naming convention. The point is that the 928 is a good dozen steps away from the 911. A world away, it turns out. While the 911 has been scaling new heights of performance and desirability over the past 40 years, the 928 remains somewhat forgotten. People make fun of it. It's been labeled an 80s car, a cocaine cowboy. Not the kind of Porsche people care about. But it was a car Porsche itself had lavished extraordinary care on. At the time it was unveiled, it was the only Porsche not somehow based on a Volkswagen product. It was all new. New V8 engine, new suspension, new layout. Hence the problem. Most people didn't really know what to make of the 928 when it came out in the late 70s, or for a long time after that. That confusion curdled into dismissal and eventually set, for a while at least, an antipathy. Why? The car was groundbreaking. It was beautiful. And man, was it fast.
I wanted a 928. Because it's weird, mostly, and it's like kind of like doesn't even like necessarily
suit me or my personality. But
it just seemed like a really weird car, really weird version of a Porsche, you know.
This is Derek Burke. He's a Detroit musician and works in the film business. He co-owns a 928 with his brother. It's his car we'll be abusing for this episode. And even he is conflicted about it.
It's like, I always picture like a Miami Vice type person in one of these cars, you know, like a really 80s kind of like, you know, a person that I'm not.
But you hope to be one.
Yeah, yeah. I struggle with my personality while I'm driving it, you know, like, you know, you get out at the gas pump, like, you know, like, you have, like, identity problems, I feel like. At least I do. I'm like, am I, like, do, like, am I, like, a, like, what? Like,
am I what? A douchebag?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Right. Like, what... What
you're
does
not,
this mean now? What does this mean now that I'm driving?
It's
like,
just a car.
You know, you're, kind of like an ostentatious German car.
You can pull it off.
Yeah.
Derek Burke's 928 is an original first-year car from 1978. Let's examine the thing that confronted customers as they walked into Porsche showrooms.
So this is the 1978 first model year. So this is as pure a reflection of the concept as you're going to get. The first year as it came from the factory. And it's in amazing shape. It's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, it's it's original paint.
Yeah, really, from this angle, it is so evocative of the 911. Just the roundness of it, the placement of the lights, the sort of updated 911 rear end. You know, just kind of cast a couple decades into the future. You know, it's amazing to me that it was so rejected by the Porsche Cognoscenti.
Right, it still is.
It kind of still is, right?
It's still an outlier, for sure.
Yeah. Because what they were going for was really an evolution of the 911 look. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't have a front grille, and the idea was, like, let's make it look like a Porsche. Round headlights pop up in this case, so like an evolution of the 911 look. But smooth, streamlined hood, a rounded back, you know, from what I understand, and this might be apocryphal, Ferry Porsche, the guy in charge at the time, loved the AMC Pacer.
I've heard that story, right? And that's the inspiration for the rear windows and the rear hatch from the Pacer. I heard that.
Exactly.
The Pacer, if you don't remember it, was the car in Wayne's World. It was also the car serial killers drove. Make of that what you will.
So you have one kind of main glass panel in the back light, and then these two side windows on the side. And that's like a kind of a laid down version of the Pacer. Mm-hmm. Super, super cool looking. And this was so avant-garde. This was so ahead of its time. I mean, it still looks futuristic.
It still looks futuristic. That's what's interesting about it. It looks like nothing else, you know.
And that's just the exterior. The interior of the car looked like it came straight out of the Dagobah system. The designers really swung for the outer reaches of the galaxy. They put a radio fader knob by the driver's door sill and installed sun visors in the rear seat positions.
And there are a couple really interesting seat options in this car, as I recall. There was the Pasha seat inserts, which were a fabric kind of velour insert, but in an op art pattern.
Yeah.
Sort of looked like a rejected Pink Floyd album cover kind of thing.
Yeah.
And super
like
trippy.
Yeah, but not like even, you know, like really weird.
Yeah, kind of strobing in and out.
I love that, yeah.
Like, it reminded me of the pattern you see when you rub your eyes, you know?
Right, it's real psychedelic.
And it lent to the sense that this car was like kind of reverse engineered from alien spacecraft, you know? It was like totally new and just landed like a meteor.
When Porsche created the 928, they thought they were making something akin to an evolution of the 911. They thought they were bringing the ideas and essence of the company forward into the modern era. Porsche didn't realize it was betraying the people who loved it most. It wasn't the 928 styling or interior that irked them. It was the stuff under the skin that got so well under their skin. Let's start at the beginning. Porsche looms large in the hearts and minds of car enthusiasts, but it's really the ultimate father and son operation. The father, Ferdinand Porsche, designed the Volkswagen Beetle for Adolf Hitler. His son, Ferry, turned that Beetle into a sports car. This became the first Porsche, the bathtub-shaped 356. The 356 begat the 911, the latter a bit bigger, a bit more solid, a bit more refined than the 356, but the fundamentals were the same. Engine hung way out back behind the rear axle, really fun to drive, really hard to drive well. There's a driving style in Porsche land called shushing, where you slide the car through a corner, ass out, foot hard on the gas, a plume of tire smoke trailing behind. You essentially use the rear of the car to steer you through a turn, rather than the front. It's fun. It looks crazy. It takes skill and nerve and an understanding of physics. And it is the essence of driving a rear-engine Porsche.
There's a glorious, like, you know, animalistic element to this thing.
Here I am at the wheel of a Signal Red 1985 911 convertible.
It's counterintuitive. In a normal car, like a front-engine, front-wheel drive car, a car starts to slide, you take your feet off the gas and everything kind of corrects itself. In this car, you take your foot off the gas, it'll spin, go into a corner way too hot, lift off the throttle, and then all of a sudden, no traction in the back. Because instead of keeping the loads on the rear wheels so they could have traction, you unload the rear wheels, no traction anymore, and the thing spins. So, you know, it really did take balls of steel to keep your foot in it, so to speak.
I own one of the early 911s, a 1971 coupe. It's one of the lightest, most sensitive road cars I've ever driven, and it rewards driverly skill. I can't shush it every time, in every corner, but when I get it right, it's like the heavens part and Jacob's ladder descends.
Oh my God.
And it's just pure sports car. Air-cooled, making all kinds of weird noises. So unrefined, but super refined at the same time.
Sports car drivers and racers embrace the 911. When driven properly, it was just incredibly fast and effective relative to its power level and complexity. It hauled ass out of corners because it carried a majority of its mass over its rear wheels. It gave it a lot of traction under power. It was light and always seemed to punch above its weight. And so it kept evolving on the street and winning on the track. This little oddball was cementing itself as the quintessential sporting machine, with wins on grueling international rallies like Monte Carlo. The 911 Turbo, or 930, came to the States in 1976. It was the 911 in a superhero costume, a fearsome and combustible mega coupe with fat fenders and a huge fluke for a tail. The Turbo was even harder to drive than the standard 911. Power delivery was all or nothing, and it gained a reputation as a dentist killer for the way it would spin off the road at the slightest provocation, like when its unexpected driver lifted off the throttle in a fast corner. It earned the nickname the Widowmaker. The 911 was a car to respect. So if the 901 was the 911, and the 930 was the 911 Turbo, where does the 928 fit in? The 928 had actually been on Porsche's drawing board since 1971, a mere 7 years after the launch of the 911 and before the 930. Then the U.S. was hit with an oil embargo in 1973.
This is NBC Nightly News, Wednesday, October 17th.
Good evening. The Middle East war produced developments all over the world today. The oil-producing countries of the Arab world decided to use their oil as a political weapon. They will reduce oil production by 5%.
The American automobile, for so long the symbol of America's wealth and extravagance, is dying. New cars and used cars stand like shining tombstones in the showrooms and parking lots of the nation's car dealers, unloved, unwanted, and unsold.
All of a sudden, it did not seem prudent to bet the future of this small family-owned company on a V8-powered sports car like the 928. It would have to wait. Maybe if there were no gas crises and the 928 came out in 74 or 75, the 911 wouldn't have had the time to endear itself so completely to the driving enthusiast. But by the 1978 model year, the 928's first, drivers had clasped the 911 tightly to their breasts. So why do the 928 at all? Well, it was a poorly kept secret that within the company itself, the 911 had been marked for death. For a couple of reasons. The first was ambition. Dr. Ernst Fuhrman was the successor to Ferry Porsche as company chairman. He was an engineer and an engine designer. He thought the 911 was on its last legs, but there was also certainly a part of him that had Mercedes envy. He wanted to build a car to compete with the absolute pinnacle of automaking, the guys who invented it all, Mercedes-Benz. Back in 1971, he wanted to show the world what a modern Porsche could be. Elegant, comfortable, sophisticated. Real competition for the big BMW and Mercedes-Benz coupes. So that was one motivating factor. The other reason had to do with this. Hear that? It's the signature whirring and churring of the air-cooled 911.
Isn't that a great sound? I mean, it is unmistakable. Nothing else sounds like this.
Man. That is a wild animal sound.
Seriously.
It does sound like a wildebeest or something.
It sounds like nothing else. Like it's straining against itself, on the verge of imploding. Sort of like how the Rolling Stones always sound like they're about to fall apart, but never do. It's part of what keeps you engaged.
You don't want to have the radio on. You need to be able to listen to that engine.
But it's also not exactly modern sounding. The company feared that its noise would get regulated out of existence. In the 911, all the noisemakers were in the back. The intake manifold, the chortling, air-cooled flat-six engine, the flatulent exhaust system. So when the 911 drove by the automotive noise regulator's microphones, it created a big decibel spike at the rear of the car. Conventional cars, with their engines up front and exhausts in the back, spread that noise out across the length of the car for less of a sonic whack. But noise wasn't the only hurdle the 911 was seen as ill-equipped to clear. There were also safety and emissions concerns. Porsche figured that any replacement for the 911 would have to be future-proofed against all this change, and that a more conventional layout would be a better basis for development. There were safety in numbers. A quiet, liquid-cooled engine in front like a more traditional sports car, with room for more mufflers and catalysts in the back. Better weight distribution front to rear, thanks to a rear-mounted transmission. A thoroughly modern sports car, a showcase of Porsche's engineering prowess. Perhaps most important, both to the engineering aspirations of Porsche and to the 928's rejection by traditional Porsche owners, was the newly designed rear axle. Seems like a small change, but it had huge implications for the car and for the argument I'm trying to make here. It was known as the Weissach axle. It stabilized the rear of the car by towing in the rear wheels, like a pigeon. And with a 928 that was far more balanced mass-wise front to rear, that meant no more easy shushing. Porsche engineers thought this was a gigantic step forward, making the car far more stable in all conditions and thus more drivable for a wider group of people. But to the Porsche faithful, it was a fun killer. Our friend Derek Burke is not one of the faithful, apparently.
Yeah, people don't want to change what they love. You know?
Yeah, because there was like they had built up this skill and this proficiency in driving the 911, and this thing was so easy to drive. They're like, what's the point?
Right.
The car doesn't push back.
You know the designer Raymond Loewy, right? If you've seen Air Force One, the aircraft, not the Harrison Ford movie, you know his work. Loewy was America's foremost industrial designer in an age when design was just starting to matter. He redesigned the Coke bottle. He did the Lucky Strike cigarette pack. He even designed Studebakers. Loewy expressed his core design philosophy as the acronym MAYA. M-A-Y-A. Most advanced, yet acceptable. The idea was that for a new design to succeed, there needed to be something familiar about it, something that linked it to the past. The logo he drew for Exxon, for example, was built off the cross. It looks like the cross of the Knights Templar. Look at the two X's in it sometime. We could do a whole episode on Raymond Loewy, but I bring him up here briefly because In the case of the 928, his otherwise successful Maya philosophy didn't quite apply. You have to understand, Porsche's core value is experimentation. Because it is so closely associated with one car, the 911, many people think that it's a risk-averse operation. One visit to the company's museum in the Zuffenhausen district of Stuttgart, Germany, will dispel that notion. There, arrayed on the floors and pinned to the walls like exotic butterflies, is Porsche's riot of ideas. Four-door 911s, the 917 racing cars with their pressurized tube frames and mechanical guts hanging out, crazy concepts such as the froggy and toy-like Panamericana, green and white German police 911s. The wild and the wacky abound. In this context, the 928 seems gently progressive. And to Porsche, it was. Even though it was the first Porsche designed entirely from scratch, with aluminum bodywork and an all-new V8, the company intended for it to be Maya in the extreme. Most advanced, yet acceptable. But loyal Porsche buyers, the very targets for the 928, saw betrayal under the car's curves.
It's just different. It's smoother, it's so much more refined sounding. It doesn't have that weird mechanical kind of coarseness that the 911 has, but you kind of love about the 911. This is just, yeah, it's like the best German Corvette that's ever been.
Right, yeah, it's like a weird German muscle car.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It feels like it wants to go in a straight line really fast.
Yeah.
And not really turn with the kind of precision. Like,
right.
When you're coming out of a corner here, it doesn't have that kind of snapback attitude that the 911 has. Where a 911, you come out of a corner, and it's like a great slalom skier. The transitional behavior is like the thing rights itself immediately and sets you up for the next turn.
Right.
This car is a lot lazier feeling. It's like, yeah, I'll get to it when I get to it.
Right. I feel like I could drive across the country in it, like on the highway, though. I think that's what it was for.
Very different than the 911. Everything has like that little layer of insulation. It's much more of a luxury car, much more of a GT. It feels much heavier in the hand, as they say. It's a vastly different driving experience than the 911. The 911 is real kind of direct and percussive and like always on. Whereas this thing, it's like you can kind of drive it with a pinky. You know what the front wheels are always doing. You know what the chassis is doing. It gives you a lot of information. But it does have that kind of creaminess that the 911 doesn't have. But this is more stable. This has killed fewer dentists.
Yeah.
Why do dentists always come out? I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's something about the kind of people who are attracted to 911s are technically minded, work with their hands at a very high level, mm-hmm. Like a dentist, like an architect. Tom Wolfe talks about that in From Bauhaus to Our House, that architects always wanted to have the 911. The 911 embodies like a real philosophy of how to build a car, and it's totally different than anything else. And I think one of the reasons this 928 wasn't as embraced is because it was a more commodified vision. It was one that was built to conform to regulations and built to conform to, the kind of style of other cars.
It seemed like a threat to a belief system in a way. The faithful didn't want to see Porsche turn into just another car company.
They failed to understand kind of the weirdness of the American customer. The American Porsche guy was buying that car out of a kind of iconoclasm because he didn't want to be lumped in with the Corvette guys or the Triumph guys or the MG guys. The Porsche was different and said something different about you. It said that you were maybe a more skilled driver or that you had some connection to the racing heritage of the brand and that you were one of those, hairy-armed heroes of motorsport, but just, your day job was a dentist.
Right.
The 928's job was to supplant the 911. to be so captivating and cool as to wipe it from memory. It did not do that. It couldn't. The 9/11 had a kind of destiny to persist. After the break, we'll hear about the governor's pardon that extended the 9/11's life. I'm Eddie Alterman, and this is Car Show.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
In 1981, the 9/11 got a miraculous green mile reprieve. Porsche brought in a new CEO, a German-American named Peter Schütz, whose parents fled the Third Reich and settled in Chicago. Schütz was an engineer and an industrialist. He had stints at Caterpillar and Cummins Diesel under his belt. When he got to Porsche, the 9/11 was just getting strapped into the electric chair. He noticed how glum everyone at the company seemed. More than just the usual Teutonic Stoic gloominess. Porsche's employees were visibly upset that the company was going to cancel the 9/11. So, Schütz heads down to a meeting with Porsche's chief engineer at the time, Helmut Bott. Schütz notices that Bott has one of those big charts on his office wall with the lifespans and development cycles of all Porsche products stretching out into the future. The line for the 9/11 stops dead in 1981. So Schütz goes over to the chart, picks up a marker, and extends the 9/11's line off the paper, onto the wall, and out the door of Bott's office. In 2013, Schütz wrote this for Road and Track. While the 9/11 could be temperamental at times, at least it had character. That's what people loved most about it. You had to remain vigilant with your inputs, but for those who could, those with training, with skill, who could catch it in a slide and bring it back into line, the 9/11 was king. It was the only car worth driving because it was the only car that would push back. In its way, the 928 only cemented the 911 as the Porsche icon. But why? In many ways, the 928 was the natural, logical progression from the 911. Much more sophisticated, highly capable, and easier to drive, build, and certify. Real competition for Mercedes-Benz and BMW. It was future-proofed yet familiar. No front grille just like the 911. A rounded rump just like the 911. And comfortable like the 911. On the face of it, the 928 hewed closely to Lowy's Maya Maxim. Should have been a layup. Many people blame the 928's price of $28,500, or over $120,000 today, for the chilly reception it received. But the 928 was launched on the cusp of the 80s, to the me generation, to yuppies. That audience was all about big-ticket statements like the 928. And besides, sports cars are Veblen items, status symbols. The higher the price, the more highly they're prized. No, it was something deeper about the relationship between Porsche coupes, new and old. Back to that bright red 85 911 I was driving earlier in the episode.
This is a lot more raw. And so you can see how the person who was used to this car, you know, in the 80s, who loved the feeling of that engine behind them, loved the sound of the engine behind them, loved the fact that they needed to know how to drive it, you can see how they'd get in a 928 and be like, if I wanted a Corvette, I'd buy a Corvette, you know? There's no personality. The car doesn't push back. You know, it's too good.
The 911 was so appealing because it was such a handful. It was small, it was noisy, and it would bite. It took skill to drive well, and everyone knew it. You elicited respect from other drivers. You were a local version of those dragon slayers who drove 911s on racetracks around the world. The superior handling and performance of the 928 was a disadvantage in many Porschephiles' eyes. The 928 was Tana, T-A-N-A. Too advanced, not acceptable. Too stable, too comfortable, too conformist. So it's ironic that the 928 was the non-conforming model at Porsche for the entirety of its run, even if it sold decently for a while and ran for a long 18 years. The 928 was always misunderstood by drivers and by the media.
It was mixed. It was mixed. You know how the media sometimes can be. You know, they look down on new things. Of course they do. Every once in a while.
Tom McDonald was the head of public relations for Audi, VW, and Porsche when the 928 was released in 1978. He was there for the car's first media drive.
It was a mixed reaction because you had some media who were biased towards air-cooled rear-engine cars. But, I mean, the 928 was such a unique, it wasn't an evolutionary car. It was a revolutionary car. And they had interesting characters around it. Again, a guy like Tony Lapine. I think someone asked him, why are the headlights, the pop-up headlights, why aren't they covered? And he says, because we want to look up to the sky to God. I mean, come on, Tony. So it was always pedal to the metal for a lot of the media guys. And it was all about the numbers. Can Porsche pull it off? And is this the way that Porsche is going to go forward? Now, I tell you, there was also a little bit of a pushback from the Porsche Club.
Tom's talking about the PCA, the Porsche Club of America.
PCA members are Porsche's greatest allies, and they can also be their greatest nemesis. And I used to liaise with the Porsche Club. That was part of my job, was to hold hands to the Porsche Club. And we had issues. I had issues going back to 1970 when the 914 came, mm-hmm. whether or not that was a real Porsche, and was that going to be accepted by the Porschephiles as a real Porsche? And then when the Porsche 924 came out, we had the same, you know, pushback by some people.
But they had spent a lot of time getting to know the 911, learning how to drive it. They took pride in being able to handle that car.
I have a very interesting little piece of paper that I keep right here. And it's a quote. It says, a Porsche owner is not necessarily a Porsche driver. Think about it. The PCA really made Porsche in this country. I mean, going back way before my time, back in the 50s and 60s, they were the backbone, if you will, of the Porsche enthusiast. Today, they are still, I'd say, influential. I mean, Porsche really reaches out to them, making sure that they were on board with new products.
So are they? Are Porsche people on board with the vehicles Porsche is making now? Or are its owners still fixated on the 911? Well, it's complicated. The 911 is still the white-hot center of the Porsche universe, with a staggering 24 variants. Everything from the basic rear-wheel drive coupe to the bewinged, track-gobbling GT3. But encircling the icon is a vast array of vehicles that at first glance seem just as offensive to the core 911 person as the 928 was. The Macan mini SUV, the heavy, hatchbacked Panamera sedan, the Panamera wagon, the Cayenne SUV, the Taycan electric vehicle. Only the 718 Boxster and Cayman sports cars seem to hew closely to the 911 in concept. The Cayenne started this Cambrian explosion of models 25 years after the 928, so let's use that as our example. The Cayenne was the first five-door, five-passenger Porsche, a high-riding, front-engine, all-wheel drive beast. It was heavy, but it was faster and better to drive than the SUVs of the day. There was some Porsche fire in it, and it was hilariously overbuilt for the carpool lane. Surprisingly good on the racetrack and very competent off-road. Truly flexible in spirit, much like the original 911. It referenced the 911 shape in its headlights and its hood. And it channeled a tiny hint of the spirit of those special 911s, the 953s and 959s, that raced in such grueling off-road trials as the Paris-Dakar Rally. To many, it looked like complete heresy, a misunderstood 928 by another name. But people bought them. Lots of them. Perhaps because more people in 2003 had more money and more access to money than ever, it allowed non-traditional, atypical Porsche buyers to enter the fold. Or perhaps because people wanted an SUV so they could see eye to eye with all the other SUVs on the road. Or perhaps because many of the Porsche faithful wanted that SUV to be a Porsche, not a BMW or a Mercedes-Benz. And on and on. But here's what I think. The real reason the 928 failed where the Cayenne didn't is this. The 928 was created to kill the 911. The Cayenne came along to exalt it, to make its essence more widely accessible, to take some of the Porsche vibe to the somnambulant SUV category, whereas the 928 was an existential threat. The Porsche faithful, those iconoclasts who wanted their engine in the back and their rear end sliding, resented the 928 for its maturity, for its price, and for its non-Porsche-ness, whatever that meant at the time. Whereas these same people, no doubt tenderized a bit by the 928, embraced the Cayenne because it celebrated the 911. Honor your heroes. Don't try to replace them. You didn't think I forgot about Joel Goodson, did you? His redemption came at the end of Risky Business.
You have something to tell me?
No, I don't think so.
I just got off the telephone with Bill Rutherford. Apparently, you two had quite a meeting. Princeton can use a guy like Joel.
What?
Princeton can use a guy like Joel. His exact words.
That's unbelievable.
You're as good as in.
Redemption is also coming, slowly, to the 928. Collectible prices are up, haters are down. And if you look at most high-end sports cars now, they're much closer in spirit to the 928 than the 911. Very refined, easy to drive every day, capable of long cross-continent stints. Grand Tourers are the order of the day now. Aston Martins, Mercedes SLs, and even some Ferraris owe a debt to the 928. Hell, some even suggest that the current 911 is so grown up that it's really now just a 928 with its engine in the back. It's the hero's journey, the monomyth, and I appreciate that. But I'm still an old 911 guy.
Well, the 928 is really special, and it was so ahead of its time that it's really where a lot of sports cars went. And that's great, you know, and it really did advance the species. But, man, give me one of these every day of the week.
Car Show is written and hosted by me, Eddie Alterman. It's produced by Sam Dingman, Jacob Smith, and Amy Gaines. Our editor is Jen Guerra. Original music and mastering by Ben Tolliday. Our executive producer is Mia Lobel. Our show art was designed by Sean Carney and airbrushed by Greg Lefever. Our patron saints are Lital Malad and Justine Lang. And thank you to Derek Burke for the abuse of your car. Car Show is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin Industries, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. To find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.